Welcome back to Insights Now. I'm your host, Gabriela Santos, the Chief Market Strategist for the Americas here at JP Morgan Asset Management. 5 months ago, my husband and I welcomed a baby boy, Leo, into the world. And one of the very first things we started thinking about, even while I was still pregnant, was paying for college. It feels like it comes up in conversation every weekend between us. And honestly, with a bit of a feeling of dread as we read the latest headlines about how expensive tuition keeps getting. So I'm absolutely thrilled to be joined today by Tricia Scarlatta, our head of 529 Education Savings, to chat about how families can plan for this important expense and hopefully sleep a little bit easier. Welcome, Tricia.
Well, I can't guarantee you about the sleep.
No? Okay.
As you know, parenthood is from the minute they're born, the sleep is just not the same.
We're in a tricky spot.
I can help you with some other things, but sleep I can't assure you on.
But thinking a little bit, I'm sure we're not the only families that are thinking a lot about the expense of higher education. And specifically, is it ever going to become more affordable, or are we just set for price increases until eternity?
I wish I could tell you that I thought it was going to become more affordable. It's you know, it actually is the greatest cost that a family deals with day in and day out. I mean, the inflation on tuition is tremendous. So it's anywhere between 5% and 7% a year. I wish I could tell you that I think it's going to happen. You would think at some point it would, but we have not seen it. We just haven't. And there's a couple things that are making it probable that it won't. One is just the demographics, right? There's just less people that are that college age, right? So there's going to be less children going to college, not because they don't want to. It's just we have less people that age. So that's number one. These institutions still need to figure out, how am I going to generate revenue? Now there's less students applying and going. And then the international student factor comes into play too, because international students, when they come over, they don't get federal aid. Yeah. So they're paying the full boat, right? So they're helping us out as United States citizens, not necessarily have to. So because they're losing some of those international students, that's impacting things too. So what do you need to do? You need to raise costs.
Great, great. And have families, because of this expense and continued rise in that expense, have families rethought recently the value of higher education? And should they?
I think they have. I think the world has become smarter in many ways. There's so much more information out there. I mean, when I went to school, I just wanted to graduate college, you know, have a great time and get a good degree and get a job. I wasn't really necessarily thinking of, what am I going to earn when I graduate? There's a lot more conversations around that. What particular majors are going to actually get me a higher paying job and make this ridiculously expensive investment worth it, right? Yeah. So I think there's a lot more of that happening today, and nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with being more informed. So I do see that families are looking at that as well. You know, I think families are also thinking, okay, well, maybe we have to do 2 years local and then perhaps transfer and do the last 2 years somewhere else. The reality is that where you graduate is where you get the certificate and what you put on your resume. We're seeing some of that, but the dream is still there.
Yeah.
Kids want to go to college. They want the experience. And it's so much more than the education. It's the experience. And boy, that social media is making them all want it. So, yeah.
You bet.
You bet, yes.
So if they're, of course, pressuring their parents to send them to college, how are families across the board planning for it?
So the good news is about 70% of families are planning. And what does planning mean? That means they're thinking about it. They're earmarking some dollars. And so that's great. What I find the biggest issue that I come across when I talk to clients is that half of that 70% is just sitting in cash, right? So they're doing the right thing. They're getting gifts. Maybe the grandparents are giving gifts. Maybe there was, you know, when the child was born or first year birthday or any of the holidays, and they're putting those dollars into a checking or savings account or a CD. So they are doing the right thing. Yeah. What we're not finding is enough of those people taking the next steps and investing. So it's not just about saving. It's really about taking that next steps. And, you know, look, for those families where it makes sense, a 529 account clearly is a great option, because not only are you getting hopefully great investment options, but you're also getting that tax-free growth and that ability to take those dollars out tax-free if the withdrawals are qualified. So that's what we don't want them to miss out on.
And why do you think families are missing out on that? Why are they under-investing or under-saving?
I really think so much of it is awareness, you know, and not, you know, if you're not in my shoes or in my team's shoes, it feels pretty daunting. It feels like, oh, it's so complicated. And we don't think it is, but maybe for the average person it is, or maybe perhaps no one's talking to them about it. Mm-hmm. I mean, 50% of Americans don't know what a 529 account is. So there's clearly an awareness issue. I think we've talked about before, we recently did a LinkedIn survey and asked, why aren't you investing in a 529 account? And overwhelmingly, the answer was lack of flexibility. And that's just not the case, Gabby. I mean, there's so many ways to be leveraging a 529 plan. They've evolved so much over time, you know, really considering that every child's journey isn't the same. So, yes, the majority of kids go to 2 or 4 year institutions, but not everybody. You know, there's now you can qualify withdrawals for an apprenticeship, for vocational school. So think about, you know, certificates that kids get. Not everybody's going to get that 4-year degree. Mm-hmm. So it's become widely, widely flexible with tons of options for qualified withdrawals. So I think we just need to make people more aware.
And we've talked about this as well. There's always that procrastination aspect as well.
Yeah.
I mean, I have this job, and my husband and I procrastinated so much to sign up for the 529.
You did not procrastinate
it's
so
real.
Much. He's not even a year. You're okay.
Oh, really?
You did
okay.
It. You did it.
What's the average age you think that
like
a child
6 or 7
six
is
or
the
seven
average
years.
Beneficiary is started around 6 or 7. Because think about it. That's when a child really gets educated. They're in kindergarten, first grade, and they're like, wow, my child is going to school every day. So that's the average. What we're really trying to do is get people to start earlier, because those 6 years are big years that you're missing out on. The whole benefit of a 529 account, I mean, any investment, right? But a 529 especially, is that you want to get that time and that tax-free growth. So if you're missing out on those first 6 years, it's definitely going to impact you. On the flip side is that don't let it be discouraging if you haven't started. Mm-hmm. There's time. I got a call the other day, and it was from a friend, and the child was going to medical school, and they hadn't put money in, and they said, should I put money in this particular case? And in this particular case, it didn't matter right at this point. Like, that person is way into their career, and this particular person, there wasn't an in-state tax benefit. So I said, you know what? You're doing what you want to do. Like, so I don't think typically it's almost never too late. You know, when kids are in high school, you know, you still have the opportunity to save, and you're not going to fully exhaust that account their freshman year of college.
Right?
You're going to pay tuition bill by tuition bill. So you even have time to save and invest while they're there.
That makes me feel better.
Yes.
That's good.
Yes.
That's good. We have time.
You've got plenty of time.
But we have to start.
Yes.
Perhaps also another reason is some families might have some hope that tuition will be paid for in other ways. My husband and I recently moved to the suburbs here in New York, and we wake up early, 7 a.m., and we're walking by the school fields, and there's so many kids there with their parents practicing their soccer kicks or their lacrosse, whatever it's called.
Yep.
What percentage do you actually see of kids that get athletic scholarships? Is that a way out?
Yeah, it's so small. It's around 2%. You know, and even still, an athletic scholarship, I mean, unless you're like sort of the next, you know, big football star quarterback going to, you know, I don't know, University of Miami, University of like a big football school, or I would say you're still going to even pay in those instances, you know, typically room and board too. And room and board is not cheap. Like, room and board at some of these private institutions is, you know, $25,000, $30,000 a year in and of itself. It's very slim, these kids going on and getting those scholarships. Typically, what you'll see is many kids go to Division III schools, and Division III schools do not give athletic scholarships.
You have to be Division One.
D2 does give some money, mm-hmm. but if you're really looking for dollars that are going to be pretty substantial, it's D1.
So better not to plan for that.
I don't think so. But look, I think the athletic stuff gives so much more character and things like that anyway. But I think to bank on that is probably not a good idea. I know we talked about I had an athlete. He was going, and then he wasn't. So, you know, he changed his mind, and it was a blessing that we did put dollars away. So they changed their mind, these kids.
No, I bet they do.
Yeah.
How long have these plans been around, Tricia? You say half of Americans don't know about them?
Yeah, it's 30 years now. I can't believe it's 30 years. So they've been around a long time. But again, you know, I think that we are naturally procrastinators, just like you said, you know, so I don't think the conversation always comes up, and not everybody's fortunate enough to have an advisor, steering them in the right direction. But the critical years that you need to be saving are as early as possible, and you don't want to delay it, because then those are really the critical years that you're putting dollars away for your own retirement. And so that's when you see the big impact, because as parents, and now you know, mm-hmm. you'll pretty much do whatever you need to do for your kid.
Oh, yeah.
And you start to make really bad decisions because you prioritize that child, and I get it. But, we talked about the other day, 41% of families in one way, shape, or form last year borrowed against their retirement to pay for college. And that's a big problem.
And how do you think about 529 plans as different than retirement plans?
You know, I think they should be thought about in parallel. You know, an overall financial plan should include both, obviously, if you have children in your family. But I do think that they should be separate buckets. And Mike Conrath talks about that all the time as well. You know, clearly.
Our chief retirement strategy.
Yes. And clearly, the retirement should be your priority, because you can't borrow for retirement. So that should be the priority for sure. But figuring out how you can kind of save for both of these goals in parallel. So again, that's when the early thing comes into factor. But with a 529 plan, you're putting after-tax dollars in, and you're getting that tax-free growth over time, and you're taking it out tax-free. Mm-hmm. So that's really where the difference is. It's really geared for education for the child.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned it's been around for 30 years. How have you seen it evolve, these plans, over time?
I think it's evolved in that we've realized as an industry that, again, not every student's journey is the same. Yeah. And so now not only it's 2 or 4 year institutions and all the expenses associated with earning that degree.
Including room and board.
Think about books, laptops, equipment. You know, my son's a musician, getting a music degree. It's all of his equipment, guitars, the pedals, all the stuff for production, all of that stuff is, because he's getting a music degree, is considered a qualified withdrawal. Now, take it to the next level. You also have vocational school, apprenticeship, certification. If you think about construction, HVAC, if you think about some of the medical things where people get certificates to maybe to be like a technician, all of that's qualified now. Mm. Also, you could be using 529 plans. Say you have a child with a disability, particularly a child that needs speech, and you're getting speech outside of the district, you're doing it yourself, and that speech is necessary for he or she to be educated, qualified expense. Mm. K-12, another thing, tuition and expenses related through K-12. So all of these things are qualified now. What I would just add a little caveat is, you do have to make sure that your state considers it a qualified plan, because there are some states that don't necessarily, you know, the majority do, but there are some states that don't necessarily consider all the federal qualified withdrawals a state level qualified withdrawal.
And that's an important question, because I'm sure we have listeners from all over the country.
For sure.
Are there other important nuances there between state plans?
Yes. And that's such a great question, Gabby. I think when I talk to families all the time, I always say, you know, once you figure out, obviously, what is your number, you know, what do you think it's going to cost you? And that's an important thing to determine, you know, and some of the ways to do it, you certainly can leverage our College Planning Essentials Guide. But, you know, you can go to studentaid.gov and go look up. They have a financial aid estimator. You can see kind of what you should expect to get in terms of aid. And that's a great place to start. But I think also, you know, once you have that number and once you've figured out what your reality, and then you don't just save, but you invest, right? So those are the things that to be mostly considering.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And for states,
oh, and,
you would
thank
first
you.
Check the...
Yes. And so those three things you want to think about. And then also, at the same time, you want to, where do you live and pay taxes? So it's really, where do I pay taxes? So if you're in a state that offers an in-state tax benefit, like New York, we offer in the state of New York $5,000 in-state benefit for individuals and then $10,000 for couples filing jointly. You want to first consider that plan, right? Everybody's looking to get some type of deduction, right? So you want to first consider that plan. There are other states that offer an in-state tax deduction as well. So first start with your state. There are many states, like I'll give you an example. Pennsylvania is what we call a tax parity state. And that's a state that offers the same benefit whether you use the in-state plan or an out-of-state plan. So you have some more flexibility there. And then there's just tax neutral states that don't offer any in-state benefit, like a Florida or a Texas that don't have state income taxes. So yes, think about those 30 things, know your number, be realistic about aid, don't save, invest, but also start with your state, figure out is there a benefit, and look, sometimes the benefit is very small, and perhaps you still want to go outside of your state plan, you absolutely have that choice. But I would say first you want to look at what that benefit is and just make sure you're aware of what it is.
Of what it is. And Trisha, I'm always curious how people ended up in their specific roles. How did you get involved in the 529 or education savings?
Yeah, it's funny. It, you know, I really got involved here because of my family. I started my career in separately managed accounts. I was on a desk, a sales desk, and then eventually ran that desk at Payne Webber, which really, really ages me, which, as you all know, is UBS now, and then transitioned over to Oppenheimer Funds and worked there for years until I had my first child. And when he turned one, I decided I wanted to stay home. And actually on my way out was when they were just starting in the 529 space. Mm-hmm. And so I consulted for them for years, launching several state plans, and did that until I came back to J.P. Morgan when we launched the New York Advisor Guided Plan and did marketing for them and then eventually took over the business. So really, it really all came down to my family is how I started.
And what have you learned from being a parent that kind of influences how you think about education savings?
Oh my God. Well, I think about my son who's 23 now. You know, I feel blessed that I was in this industry because I'm not sure if I would have started that early. I actually started when I was pregnant with him. Mm. And he went to Fordham, which was very expensive. And so I feel blessed to have had, I felt that I needed to open an account to know the experience. Mm. With my younger guy who's 19, you know, he's, you know, has some disabilities. And what I found is that, you know, the 529 plan has really helped me with him because of the flexibility. So he, you know, again, in high school, needed additional things to be able to be educated. I was able to use it for that. Mm. I was, he started at a four-year institution that didn't work out, now is at a community level, and he's now starting at another four-year school. I've been able to use it for all of those things. So I'm experiencing the flexibility of the 529 account. So between starting early, you know, that was a huge benefit. And then really being able to, you know, as these plans have evolved, they've really been able to help me with my younger guy, who's maybe not the typical journey, right? Mm-hmm. So I would say those are the two biggest things that I learned, you know, both maybe more typical, maybe a little bit less.
Thank you so much for sharing your story, Trisha, and the passion about education savings. And I have absolutely no excuse to procrastinate any further in opening my own for Leo.
Yes.
Thank you for joining us for another episode of J.P. Morgan Asset Management's Insights Now. And we hope you join us next time.
This material is for information purposes only. The views, opinions, and statements of financial market trends that are based on current market conditions are those of the speaker and may differ from those expressed J.P. Morgan Asset Management or by other areas of J.P. Morgan Chase & Co. Any companies referenced are shown for illustrative purposes only and are not intended as a recommendation. We believe the information provided here is reliable, but should not be assumed to be accurate or complete. The views and strategies described may not be suitable for all investors. This content is intended for information only based on assumptions and current market conditions and are subject to change. No warranty of accuracy is given. This content does not contain sufficient information to support investment decisions. It is not to be construed as research, legal, regulatory, tax, accounting, or investment advice. Investments involve risks. Investors should seek professional advice or make an independent evaluation before investing. The value of investments and the income from them may fluctuate, including loss of capital. Past performance and yield are not indicative of current or future results. Forecasts and estimates may or may not come to pass. J.P. Morgan Asset Management is the asset management business of J.P. Morgan Chase & Company and its affiliates worldwide.